Your network of praise. I'm Carlene Prince. Well, go ahead. What?
I don't know.
You don't know.
I was just like, I don't know.
All right. Well, this interview is a bust. Have a great afternoon. I am sitting here with MC1. Am I saying that correctly?
You are.
Okay. Now, my entire staff, when they hear this interview, is going to laugh so hard because I am what they call an urban wannabe. I try really hard to be cool, but I'm just a little too white.
You are cool. You are cool. Trust me.
Well, thank you for that. I appreciate it. Okay. So you are here at Warrior Leadership Summit 2018. And I walked into a room last night where you were just doing your thing, and you're going to have to explain to our folks what it is you do, because I'm afraid if I attempt, I'm going to make you laugh. But
okay.
It was incredible.
Oh, wow.
It was so much fun watching you.
Appreciate that. Okay, so on the short end of it, it would be called DJing.
Okay.
So to set that picture out there, you picture some guy at the turntables.
Yeah.
That's the short answer of what I was doing. But we were also involved with setting the tone and vibe of the room,
totally
making
did.
Sure that it's a youth event. That
yes.
They, that when the kids walk in, the taste and texture of the room says, oh, this is for me. This is a me event.
Yeah.
We like to say we buy the whoever's speaking, we buy them a head start on listening. So the reception in the audience is a little faster.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
We buy them at least like a good 2.5-3 minutes.
No doubt. No doubt. That's awesome. No, I came in that room and it was just, you could feel everybody was tired and hot and sweaty from traveling on buses all day and stuff. And a lot of these, I was surprised when Ron Hutchcraft asked at the beginning of the session last night how many Warriors this was their first time coming.
A lot.
And it was, I think, like a third of the room, I would say.
At least.
Yeah. And
so
for many of them, this being their first experience,
yeah.
I don't know if they were expecting you.
And the
vibe that you set, because I think they walked into that going, if I thought this was going to be corny, I might be wrong.
Oh, wow.
You know?
Yeah. And it's not new. It's not like a new format. You'll see any time like Hollywood tries to sit somebody down for a while.
Yeah.
You know, I call it Paul Schaefer to David Letterman. That's the component.
Sure.
You know,
yeah.
Or the DJ on Ellen.
Yeah.
Who may or may not actually be DJing. It's a component. It's a piece that sits there. And I mean, that guy is a DJ, though. The DJ's for dance contests and stuff. But that's the component piece. You know, it helps.
Yeah.
Helps be a hinge to the programming.
Yeah.
You know, and any time Hollywood sets somebody down for a couple hours, they spend production money.
Sure.
And we're not competing with Hollywood necessarily, but you are competing with earbuds.
Yeah.
And you're competing with the fidelity. These kids walk in.
Yes.
They're used to hearing stuff in stereo or hearing it loud.
Yeah.
And so a lot of times when we try to cater to them, we need to at least match the same excellence.
Sure, yeah. Sure. I love that. So explain the type of music that it is that you were playing.
So I play a wide variety of different styles, from what would be considered EDM or electronic to hip-hop, or even sometimes we integrate some worship into it, or worship words over
sure.
EDM beats,
yeah.
so to speak. Whatever the room needs.
Yeah.
For the given night. And so some, like this morning, it was a little slower beats per minute, but still intense for energy wise. So,
sure.
So, but sometimes I'll factor in where the speaker's going to go or what the night's going to be
mm-hmm.
talking about, and pick songs that match that or mirror that same context.
I love that.
So.
I love your spirit of excellence. Like
it's
already, you know, you don't just do this as a gig, you do this as something unto Jesus, because that's the kind of honor and integrity that a man of God would put into this. So that's amazing.
Work as if unto.
Yes, exactly. So in Native culture, is EDM and hip hop, is that a majority of what they're drawn to, or is it widespread into different genres?
Well, it'd be hard to give you a qualified answer in the sense that, you know, with over 500 tribes, and they're all unique.
Yeah.
So not only would I not be able to answer for a general one tribe,
mm-hmm.
Not only would I not be able to do that because I don't know them, but all of them, I also couldn't lump them into one category, categorically. But in my experience working with a lot of young people around Indian country, you'd be surprised the variety of musical styles from George Strait,
sure.
you know, I'm saying all the way
yeah.
to you know, hip hop. And in the Christian market, there's, you know, a lot of different versions of secular music, you know, so you have different, the same genres, but these artists have decided to work in, like, kingdom lanes, so to speak. So
so
it might have the same style, like, it might be hip-hop or it might be rap, but it's Christian rap or Christian hip-hop.
So sure.
So I'll play that version But with EDM, there's no words, so it's all just music. So I don't know what would be the primary. That would vary from tribe to tribe.
But for an event like this, that type of style seems to work really well across the board.
Across the board.
Yeah. Okay, so obviously, since this is radio, people can't see your face like I
can. I have what's known in the industry as a face for radio.
I understand. Exactly. So you are native yourself.
Yes, I'm Osage, Potawatomi, Delaware, Puerto Rican on my dad's side.
Wow.
I'm sure a bunch of other stuff.
Right.
If we do
a
DNA test, I'm sure
a little bit
of
everything. Yeah. So you have a heart for Native ministry, and you do that. Tell us all your job roles and titles. What all do you do?
Well, I have a heart for ministry in general and youth in general across the spectrums. Being Native, that of course, that might put that as a priority in where my unique setting. I might be more useful in that setting because I am Native. So I'm an official DJ for Nike N7. So I do events for them. But obviously, that's not ministry related. That's just Nike in general. So Nike N7 has the N7 part of Nike is an organization that said, it was created by a Native guy that worked at Nike, and said proceeds from that product go to the N7 fund. And then if you buy a product for there, then they spend money into indigenous organizations throughout North America.
Oh, wow.
So since 2009, where $5 million has gone to indigenous organizations. So
goodness.
It might not be Christian, but it's outreach, and it's positive, and it's getting kids active. And so that's consistent for me across the board, whether it's a tribal young person or foster care. I do this at conferences that vary. So for us, ministry is our motivation, maybe not necessarily our agenda. At all the times.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, totally.
But it's
does.
Definitely why behind the scenes what we do. We love because we were loved first.
Right.
And without the need to be loved back. Mm-hmm. So that may be DJing, that may be running tech or audio off the scene. Mm. You could dial up the production of it or dial it back.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, just use what we can, where we can, when needed.
Right. So when you describe that there are some things that aren't like overtly ministry, you know, maybe more in the secular realm.
Okay.
I know and you know some believers have a little bit of a hard time with that because they feel if it isn't overt ministry that somehow you're hiding your faith or you've crossed over is another music industry term.
Or sold out.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But I personally am a huge believer. I think everything is about relationship.
Absolutely.
And so it's amazing how you can do something, a job, you know, that isn't, again, overtly ministry-oriented, but in the off-the-mic times or whatever,
man,
all of a sudden some guy comes up to you and starts pouring out his heart.
Absolutely.
And you can just give him a full dose of Jesus.
Yeah. We call it marketplace ministry, kind of, like where most profound times of ministry for us has been times that weren't necessarily church-related, where it wasn't where there was an altar or a pulpit or a pew, but there were people and there were a relationship. And when I was working at Best Buy, that's where God would use opportunities, unique opportunities when the windows would open up and you would love those. Yeah. And out of that, opportunities would open up. And they weren't forced. That's what I mean by agenda. It's not a forced obligatory mechanism on our end to try to create something.
Right.
We're just fellow beggars letting people know where bread's at. If they're hungry as well. That's where we got it from, so we can just share them where we got it from.
Yeah. And wouldn't you say it's really about all of us being wherever God has called us? Because there are the Billy Grahams of the world who their entire life seems like it's very much overt ministry oriented. And God uses them there because that's what he wrote, that's what he authored for them in the chapters of their lives. But then there are other people like yourself who are called to, do some ministry events, but also we need people in the business world, in the Hollywood world.
Yes.
How else is the light going to get there?
Absolutely. Well, I'm a firm believer in that I thought at one point I was supposed to be, when I signed, when I surrendered and signed up, I thought, now I have to be Billy Graham Jr. Now that's the model. I have to, that's the only way to be Christian is to have a stadium packed for that. And that's, wait, that's already been done. That's his role. That's his job.
That's right.
What's how God's going to use me might be different in that the body is more than just the eye. There's all different kinds. And even more so, the ones that we think are lesser are necessary.
Yeah.
That scripture stands out a lot to me that, you know, because I always thought, oh, how could God use something insignificant as this? And then that scripture stood out that even those that we would view as lesser mm-hmm. are necessary. So I just let the body parts be the body parts and play our role.
Smart. I like that. I have several little soapboxes that I'm kind of known for that I'm passionate about, but one is exactly what you said. When we think we aren't qualified because we're not who we consider the spiritual giants, the Billy Grahams, the Max Lucados, even the Ron Hutchcrafts.
Well, yes.
I love that man.
Please know that.
I love that. But when we disqualify ourselves, mm-hmm. if we feel like we can't communicate like that or I don't have a platform ministry,
right.
I don't care if you're a clerk at the grocery store. I don't care if you're a plumber. Do it for Jesus. Mm. And again, it's all about those dialogues that open up between person to person. And even if they have watched your life for a while and they've never been open to a conversation, all you have to do is wait for a season because life happens to all of us.
Man.
And when it slams on the brakes, you're the person they're going to call if they have watched you and observed you being consistent you know, the entire time.
Well, I had an opportunity early on in the music career that, you know, before I was with Forefront and had albums out, I had an opportunity to play at Cornerstone. And my job at Best Buy was real helpful for me. Management all loved what I was doing, traveling, and this emerging rap career was beginning to take off, and it was being played on the radio, and I was getting some buzz and some hype, and I had this opportunity, and my role with them was always really nice. They would let me off when necessary. It was a really good relationship, but the key was, if I couldn't get my shift covered, couldn't get off. My opportunity for Cornerstone happened, and I was so excited. I don't know if they still do that, but... For those that are listening, it used to be the biggest thing in Christian world was if you could play at Cornerstone, that was like that was the biggest of biggest.
Sure.
And there was my opportunity to go play. Hey, you're on a song. It's charting. Come up here. You can be on it. You'll be on the Cornerstone stage. I couldn't shake my shift to save my life. I tried everything. And my manager, who was a believer, said, there's nothing I can do for you. If you can't get it covered, it's a no call, no show. Sorry. You know, I was like, my agreement was always I'll do those only if possible.
Right.
So I do my shift, and at the end of my shift, this girl comes in with her brother, and we end up having some ministry time there. And as her and her brother walk out of Car Audio, I feel like the Lord said, I'd rather you minister to one that entertained 70,000. And that sat home as far as that, where the emphasis needed to be is with the people and the relationships.
Yeah.
And that could happen at Best Buy. That could happen at the marketplace. They didn't have to happen at the stage or the arena. Or the pulpit for us.
Yeah,
it didn't have to fit those boxes.
Yeah, I have an incredible pastor, and I name drop him all the time because I'm just so blessed by him. He's like a father in the faith to me. And his name's Pastor Mike Chong Perkinson.
Nice.
He's got some Asian descent in there, and he's just amazing. And one of the stories I remember he first shared when he first came to our church is he was very honest about how he used to struggle with pride, wanted to be the best pastor out there, and he came to a point where he was. Like on his knees, and he's like, Lord, I'm staying here and in this posture, and I'm going to trust you. If you want me to go any higher, you raise the elevation underneath me, you know?
Yeah.
You raise the platform underneath me, but otherwise, if I stay right here at this level, if that's where I can best serve you, then that's great. And when he made that surrender, it's interesting how this usually happens.
Man.
Sometimes that's when it happens.
You give it up, and he takes over.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So you are an artist in your own right, and you perform as well?
So I do. I did. I was. I were. Something. So, yeah, I had a career in that. And right at the point of being signed, I was the next artist after Benjamin Gate in the Forefront world.
Yeah, we have some people who remember that.
Toby Mac and all that.
Sure.
I was there in the middle of all that. And right then the labels kind of shifted, and we shifted as a family. We were in Nashville. And They had sent us money without a record deal, which was amazing. All the other artists were like, wait, what? How did that happen? Because they were signed and waiting
What's
for money.
Your
yeah.
formula?
They were like, how did that happen? And we were like, look, we're just trusting God on this thing. And so when that started to stale and the industry was shifting with music, with trends were changing, we decided just to move back and focus on family, focus on community and outreach. And we landed our music then to On Eagle's Wings and Ron Hutchcraft and various different ministries. And the rest kind of took off from there, all the way to the point to where maybe was it 6 years ago, maybe, that I kind of retired.
Mm-hmm.
I was done with the rap. I've got gray. You can't see it on radio, but I got gray in my goatee. So it might not be the best look for a rapper guy to have gray in his goatee. But we do youth conferences. We do assemblies. And sometimes I'll step around the turntables and do a couple songs. So I still dabble with it. And then recently we had a pretty crazy opportunity just opened up. So we're
really?
Kind of keeping our eyes on how that's going to form.
Okay.
It's with a secular venture, and they asked me to do a cameo for what was happening in Standing Rock.
Wow.
So I did a verse for the Standing Rock along with seven other rappers from various different genres and backgrounds and faiths. And my voice, of course, mentioned God in it, but
yeah,
it got selected. I'm in part of that song. That song later got nominated for an MTV Music Video Award.
Wow.
And then later won.
Congratulations.
Yeah, last year. Yeah, it's one of the whole category. They said since everyone in that category was trying to do good in the earth in their various ways, everyone mm-hmm. should win. And so there we have a moon man now. When yeah. we gave up on it, some of those accolades begin to happen. And so we just want to be an influence or help to that yeah. entertainment world the best we can. So.
Yeah. So in this world, speaking of that and some of the endeavors that you do, especially as we talked about some of the secular ones, how can folks listening be praying for you? Because I'm sure there's pitfalls. There's, yeah. you know, there's things to look out for and that kind of stuff.
Probably discernment.
Yeah.
You know, on Ron taught me years ago, I took it straight from him. Mm-hmm. He said on the grid for how you manage success, mm-hmm. opportunities come after that, and then you have to pick between two good ones.
Mm-hmm.
It's easy to pick when you don't have no options. But then when you have great options, then how do you select them? So he says, you know, your first option is you examine where's the most money, but you don't decide yet. Mm-hmm. Where's the most people, but you don't decide yet. Where's maximum impact? Because
wow.
that might have the least people and the
yep.
least money. And
yep.
so try to find, and God provides. So then
yeah.
that's our grid is
wow.
trying to sift through these opportunities for where's maximum impact.
Mm-hmm. I like that. That's a good formula.
Straight from Ron.
that Ron guy. I'll tell you what, he's something special. Let's see, what haven't we covered? Have we talked about your ministry specifically to Native American youth as far as, I mean, how much are you involved in that? Because you're a speaker too,
yeah,
I think I heard.
I'm a speaker across the board for positivity, encouraging these kids and youth. Actually, we do leadership camps too for schools and,
wow.
and reservations that, again, might not have the ministry trappings on it.
Uh-huh.
And so I try to support and assist the outspokenly, what you would call, like from a distance, hey, that's a Christian group.
Mm-hmm.
I help them
mm-hmm.
behind the scenes as much as I can. And then we come into various organizations, and we work with a lot of organizations that are ran by the tribe, ran by the tribal government, or funded by federal programs.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no proselytizing or evangelism necessarily, but it's definitely serving and loving the
right.
community.
Right.
And so that's the unique nature that we go into communities under, is schools, assemblies, leadership camps, conferences.
And I would think that that has a special power and inroad in itself, because again, as I'm starting to understand about Native culture, so many of these kids are taught that it's the white man's God. We've heard that phrase all this week and all that kind
yeah.
of stuff. So something
yeah.
that has a Christian label, just mm-hmm. because it's Christian,
yeah.
they wouldn't be as open to. So again, here you come in, you know, they don't feel as threatened because they don't think at
absolutely.
First,
yeah.
you know.
Why is the serpent harmless as a dove?
Yeah.
So there's a strategy in place sometimes, as far as if you know going ahead of time that if you lead with this, they're not going to listen to you.
Yeah.
Then why lead with it?
Right.
If the truth is the truth, I have to have security in that and know that I'm not leading with it for my sake.
Mm-hmm.
So let me just lead with love.
Mm.
And then I have the right to share where that love came from, who that love is.
Yeah.
But to just come in ahead of time, yeah, because they have a long history of being wounded in the name of God.
Wow.
And so we have to untie that. And that takes discernment and takes walking with compassion first, and
mm-hmm.
and then waiting for those unique opportunities to share.
Yep.
And they happen.
Yep, absolutely. So I'm a singer-songwriter myself, so as I'm listening to you, all I heard was lead with love, and I'm like, that's a song. That needs to be a song.
All right.
Because that's the way my
there
brain
you go.
Works. So.
Well, just remember me when you make that.
That's right. That's right. Exactly. Let's definitely make that together. Any other things you want to tell us about yourself, ministry? How can people be praying for you? I just want people to kind of get a really great
that.
Round picture of who you are. So.
I mean, most important thing is not necessarily the accolades or the VMAs or the
yeah.
awards. It's really my family that I got. That's,
yeah.
I feel like I've kind of made it.
Yeah.
Ah, you know what I mean? Like everything that I didn't have growing up, I have now. Mm-hmm. So just the protection over that and preserving that.
Yes.
That we would have discernment on how to, you know, manage that going in, because, you know, we have it all figured out, but mm-hmm. we're, you know, doing the best we can and just want to stay led in that.
Yes.
That's what I think at the end of the day is going to matter more than how many songs I do or how well I chart or how many Instagram followers I have. I think, you know.
Those are just the cherries on top of the Sunday, but they're not the Sunday.
Yes. How my son turns out and how my wife looks at me. Oh.
She's right there.
She's.
I asked her if she'd be on the mic, but she didn't want to be, but that's okay. She's gorgeous, by the way. So I'm going to do what pastors do on Sunday morning where they say in closing and then they go another 15 minutes
great.
Because I just remembered a couple of the questions that I wanted to ask you. So your involvement here at Warrior Leadership Summit, you're usually here every year?
Every year.
Okay.
Every year for the past 14 years.
14 years.
Yes.
Okay.
Our son was 8 months old the first year. And I was part of the team, the OEW team.
Sure.
And then we joined the team and helped lead the Canadian team for another 6 years, 5 years, something like that. Yeah, we were highly invested into the team and the conference. I come from a conference world, so I wanted to bring excellence to conference world.
Awesome.
And so, man, helping them any way I could. Actually, it was so I was worldly, and then I gave it all up, and then. I was always in love with the turntables, but I couldn't afford them. Mm. And so I was rapping as part of the culture. And then when I came and surrendered and God breathed life into that, I was rapping, you know, for Christian and for Christian labels and stuff. And then I was doing that for the team.
Yeah.
And it was on OEW's outreaches when I realized, man, somebody should DJ this.
Huh.
But it was sitting at an outreach with the On Eagles Wings kids. They had like a 6 CD changer. And it was clunky, and I was like, this is so awkward. Like this, like you see the kids at the outreach, you know, it was the best they had, but you'd see the kids at the outreach go, that transition was awkward.
Yeah.
And I thought, this could be DJed. This could be so much cool. This could be cool. And I thought, I need to get tables. And that's when the tables came back, and I started using them for this kind of component
for amazing.
Outreach. So
that's amazing. So I right before we started this interview, our mutual friend Rick Whitmer brought you into the room to me,
Rick.
And
Rick.
He's so awesome. And he was explaining to you why I'm here because of the fundraising that our audience did to support Warriors coming here. This is my first year experiencing this, and there's a lot of things I could say, but you yourself being Native, having come yourself, having been a part of the ministry now in your role as a DJ for the last 14 years, can you explain to my friends back home why this is so important? We've heard a few different versions of that story, but just speaking of that.
I'm sure it'll be probably pretty similar because it's, other they use words like amazing, it's awesome, but it's hard to convey through radio what it's like to feel like you're the only one like yourself in a world. You're like, you had this tremendous surrender and liberation at the same time on your res or wherever you're from. And then you look around and your family and your aunties and these people, they're not in favor of that decision for you. And you feel like you're alone in that goodness is all this persecution. But then you come to a place like this and it's bigger than anything they've seen. It's the production level is on par with anything they've seen on TV. And the sonics match their earbuds. And everything is excellent right across the bar, but it's positive, and it's uplifting, and it's encouraging. It's counteracting the influences of suicide and addiction. And for the first time, they're walking in knowing, hey, I'm not alone. I'm part of a huge movement.
Yeah.
So I would say that's, I mean, this could go on and on, but that's the first huge takeaway that I see in their eyes.
Yeah.
Kids from the bottom of the Grand Canyon to the top of Alaska, some villages. To urban kids, they'll come in and be like, whoa, I didn't know there were this many others out there like me.
So
they're part of a community.
So what do you see God doing with Native culture in general, and maybe especially the youth, maybe or maybe not, but I mean, is God on the move? Are we on the verge of something?
What does it say? He's always talking and we don't perceive?
Has
he always been moving and it's up to us to figure the steps out? The world they're supposed to be ordered. So I know that we're living at a very unique time, in the sense that never before in the history of the world have youth had access to the things they have access to currently. And that's true in tribal communities as well. So I just talked in the workshop recently about, you know, some of those truths that stand out for this generation, you know, that this is the first time in recorded history they have access to combined wealth, if they ever got together, you know. There's a lot, I also want to say, you know, there's a lot on the res that's beautiful too. There's a lot in their value systems, and a lot in some of the family ties that is beautiful. That also, I think they come away from here knowing how to preserve that when they go home. That it's not all, oh, this is horrible and this is great. Instead, there's mixtures of that in their homeland, and they can go home with a renewed sense of how to cultivate the good where they are. Because there's good there.
Yeah, that's good to hear, because even preparing for this, you just hear, you're going to hear a lot of stories, you're going to hear a lot of, you know, and I was trying to emotionally prepare myself for all the stuff that I've just, unfortunately, like a lot of Caucasians have been so, just so naive to, you know, but I want to be, Nick that spoke last night was talking to me afterwards, and he's like, I love the fact that you're here, and he said, you know, more than just you getting the experience to report on back home, he looked at me straight in the eye, and he said, you now have a responsibility to let people know.
Yeah.
And I was like, that, I needed that charge, you know, to know that this isn't just a job assignment.
Right.
This is a heavenly assignment as well. And it was great. It was great. So.
Yeah, but it's not all bad there.
Yeah.
It's beautiful at the same time.
Yeah.
So it's a way to, we have to figure out. I think when you say what God's up to.
Right.
Is cultivating that.
Yeah.
And bringing a renewal to some of the value systems that have been. We always say you can be old school and the new school. Uh-huh. Some of that old school was needed, and we have to refresh it, and man, like, prayerful people, just got to plug it in, you know?
And I truly believe some things are built into natives as a purpose and a design by God, ways and practices and methods of seeing things that really don't belong to any other race. Each one has the custom design built that God has put in there to bring out specific things in the earth.
Yeah, it says that the redemptive plan, that we are placed where we're placed so that the redemptive plan may manifest. So we all play our part.
Yep, absolutely. Last question for you. Would you just tell me your testimony of how you personally came to know Jesus? Is that the longest question yet?
Oh, man. Last question, real quick. So we got an hour.
You can take as long as you want.
So when I was 9, I did the whole go to Easter camp with the... There was always somebody where we'd move in California that loved God, someone, somewhere. Mm-hmm. So this little lady had her apartment, and she would have Bible study. Mm-hmm. And she asked me to go to Easter. And so at Easter, I went, and they had us bow our heads at the kids' camp. I said, if you want Jesus in your heart, raise your hand. And I thought, everyone wants that.
Yeah.
I figured I was like one of those rhetorical hands in the air questions. So me and this other kid were the only ones with our hands up. So we had to walk up front, you know, and do that whole thing. Now, whether that's where... it was, or it was later when I got to the end of me and surrendered and was like, okay, because I had conversations with him the whole time.
Yeah.
Where on the theological spectrum it is, I don't know. That's for someone higher than me.
Why couldn't it be a both and?
Yeah,
you know?
Maybe. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. So all I know is that at some point I had power.
Yeah.
When I surrendered, there was power afterwards. And then... I could see women as sisters for the first time. My soul was restored, and then it was not about what I could take from them, but what could I offer?
Wow.
And everything changed. Even I could understand King James out of nowhere.
That's a feat some of us still haven't conquered.
I was like, this is hilarious. I can't believe I'm reading King James. It's crazy. But anyway, the Spirit is whatever point in the timeline is born again, I don't know, but I know that at the second point power came on, and then everything changed.
What do you love most about Jesus?
That's a good question. Mm. probably his weirdness.
Hmm.
Yeah, yeah. So when I was growing up, I used to do these. I used to have these weird things where he was always been there,
mm-hmm.
and so my mom and dad would fight. They would argue, alcohol. So mm-hmm. sometimes my mom would beat my stepdad up, and my stepdad sometimes would beat her up all around the house.
Wow.
So you just never knew who was going to be the aggressor. But I used to have these little Bibles. And so when they would leave and sometimes not come home for a day or two at a time, in the front it would say, if you're scared or have fear,
mm-hmm.
and then you could look up these scriptures on fear,
mm-hmm.
and it would make me feel better.
Right.
Even as a kid. So I was like 6, 7 years old. I didn't know what the context meant. I didn't know what some of the words meant. But I knew that when I read those scriptures on fear, I felt better.
Wow.
I was like, okay, so this book means, this book works.
Mm-hmm.
So 6-year-old, 7-year-old, 8-year-old, this book worked. So then I grew up with that mindset of this word works. That's Jesus.
Yeah.
Right. Weird, but it's cool. So then when they would fight and they'd be home and they'd fight all around the house, I had a second Bible added to it and I put it in front of my doors, both sides of my bedroom door. So whoever was not the aggressor would run into my room last.
Mm.
And whoever was the aggressor would stand in the hallway and couldn't come in. And I used to always feel like they would cuss and rant and rave and shout.
Yeah.
And I'd be under my bed while looking at their feet under the, you know, in the doorway there. Mm-hmm. But they wouldn't step into my room. And I used to always think, and again, this is weird, but I used to think, it's the Bibles. They can't come in here because this is, God's made this safe.
Wow.
So as a little kid, I thought, oh, man. So
that's something.
That's what I love about him. He's been weird with me, and it's awesome.
That's the best answer I think I've ever heard. I love it. Thank you so much. This has been a real treat. So I'm going to tell you something, and it's not pedestal language. It's in my heart to tell you, but you were made for greatness.
Oh, dang.
And your humility level is what allows you to go high and deep.
Wow.
And that's just incredible.
Are you trying to prophesy right now?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, my God.
Absolutely. Well, so thank you for what you do. I know there's a lot that you have given. And while you pour out, Proverbs 11:25, may he who refreshes others be refreshed himself.
Water, also. Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you for that.
Thank you. You bet.
And thank you guys out there for doing what you guys did. Thank you.